even coronavirus can't keep us apart. Because we love you so much. From all of us at Bashani Radio app, stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay home.
Stay home.
And keep us blasting on your phones. Bashani Radio app, always talking about everything. Download us free in the App Store. Kaboom! You heard?
This is David Spradley, and you should check out Z, the SEO queen.
Do you have an online business or want an online business but lack the team or the expertise to get on Google page one? Did you know that 33% of all Google search traffic clicks the first result only? Do you want to get more traffic to your website, social media profile, or just want your video to get more hits or go viral? Well, you need to contact the SEO Queen Digital Marketing Agency, where you are more than just a number. You can't lose with the SEO Queen. More visibility, more credibility, more profitability. Visit theseoqueen.net for more information. That's theseoqueen.net. theseoqueen.net. That's theseoqueen.net.
Hello, this is Lady Z, the violinist. I'm coming to you because I want to encourage you to get your copy of Elevate. It's available on Apple Music and iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. So if you're listening to this on your computer or your cell phone, whether you have an Android or an iPhone, you can get your copy of this song, this show's theme song, by just going to Apple Music, Amazon, or Google Play and get it today. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
This is David Spradley, and you're listening to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z.
Welcome to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z, a podcast about the secrets to success in technology, music, and business on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z on any mobile phone or tablet device. The Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z, where we explore tech and enjoy the music and learn the secrets to music and technological success. Please follow us online at www.ladyz.com. and on all social networks at LADYZHE. Please pull out your phones, and if you're listening on your phone, just hop on over to Instagram and follow me at LADYZHE. My next guest is a multi-award winning storyteller, spoken word artist, playwright, oral historian, singer, songwriter, music producer, filmmaker, and professor, born in Bronx, New York, and raised in both New York and Mashpee, Massachusetts. He is a graduate of Music and Art High School, now also known as LaGuardia. He's a trained violist, jazz pianist, and composer. He performed at Carnegie Hall before the age of 14. And by 16, he was one of the youngest studio session players in EMI history. He is currently the keyboardist and singer for the multi-Grammy nominated soul funk band, The Groovelottos. As an iconic part of the East Coast underground art and music scenes for over 30 years, his stages have included theater, schools, street corners, libraries, galleries, museums, festivals, powwows, jails, nightclubs, temples, community centers, and colleges throughout the country. He plays solo performance pieces and experimental films. He has been, his films have been presented throughout the USA and Canada, as well as the Caribbean and the UK. He earned his BA in music and MS in film from Boston University and his master's of fine arts in writing from Goddard College. Just a tremendous man. I could go on and on and on about him, but I want to share these last two facts with you. He is a tenured associate professor of English and communications and Black studies at the University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth, where he teaches playwriting, fiction writing, oral tradition, spoken word, Black aesthetics, Black American cinema, and digital filmmaking. And he is also a novel writer. Land of the Black Squirrels is his first novel. And he is the proud father of the ZYG 808. Mm. So without further ado, I want to introduce to some and present to others, none other than the funky Professor Maleen. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
And I'm going to say the last thing you listed is my greatest accomplishment.
You know what?
ZYG 808.
You know what? That young man, I interviewed him last week on the podcast, and after the interview, and I was just reading about him, I was so impressed, and I started reading about you, and I was like, okay, now this makes sense. This is why he's just as brilliant as he is, because his father is a genius too.
Oh man, it's, you know, single parenting.
Yeah, I definitely can relate. I'm a single parent as well. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And you know, your child lives your life. And so, you know, his single dad's an artist academic, so that's the world he grew up in.
Right. You know,
it's funny because, like, some of what I have referred to as my Black male photos are pictures of him when he was 7, sitting with, like, Abby Odunowale of The Last Poets.
Uh-huh.
At an event that we co-performed at and that kind of thing. And I said, one day this is going to be one of the memories that you're going to be bragging about. Like, yeah, when I was a kid, I was hanging with The Last Poet, you know. But, but you know, good to see that he absorbed it in a very, very positive way.
Yeah, I think I can definitely see and hear the impact of you on his sound. Because for a young person to have such a sophisticated sound, an older sound, a jazz-driven sound, that is rare, you know, because most people want to, you know, have that trap feel, the trap, the produce, you know, just use Fruity Loops and see how you can manipulate what's there in the system versus picking up an instrument and just creating from there. There's a difference
in the collage method.
When you're creating, when you go into using software, when you do software driven creation versus, you know, acoustic instrument creation.
Right.
There's a big difference. Right.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because it's the industry that creates a sense of either or.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you want, if we were going to compare music to visual art, you have visual art that's based on drawing and painting, and you have visual art that's based on collage, because it's a form the French call découpage, which is a collage form. And when you think about it, hip hop is the découpage, you know, traditionally of a musical artistic form. And it, you know, you have the choice of, do I want to use real instruments or do I want to use a collage approach?
Right.
And sometimes, you know, the true beauty can come with both. You have groups like The Roots, where they're the natural vibe of the music. And you had a group out of California that really didn't, well, it was interesting. They were big in California and then they were big in Europe. And it was only because I knew DJs that I heard them in the East Coast, but there was a really, really good group, the Booyah Tribe.
Uh-huh.
out of California, and they were a band. They were a hip hop band,
right?
Instrumentalists, and I can proudly say I'm 52 years old, so I remember way back in the day, the Zulu Nation parties had real bands along with the DJ,
right?
And the MC would rhyme over the real band as well as the DJ. So,
right.
So real bands are actually part of the foundation of hip hop. And, you know, it's interesting because he does a lot of the trap stuff, but even when he's doing trap, he's using a real drum.
Right, right.
I've noticed because he'll sit down and actually play the 30-second on his drums.
Right.
It's interesting because that actually comes out of jazz. A lot of that trap sound, you listen to the records that came out of like Stax Records, the Memphis right. sound, the old Isaac Hayes, and you listen to what they're playing on the hi-hat and like listen to Shaft and listen
right.
to what they're playing in the hi-hat. That's trap.
Right, right, right.
Except now it's being done on a 808 or an SP-1200 or SP-404 or whatever sampler they're using to get that. But if you listen to it, it's rooted in jazz players who were studio session players for R&B records. That's
right.
what the trap, you know. And, you know, the poor young man, I made him actually understand the history of what he wanted to do when he first told me he wanted to do hip-hop. One of the first things I had him do was when he went to visit his mother in the Bronx, I said, okay, so you're going to go to 1520 Sedgwick Avenue and you're going to take a picture in front of the building for me. And he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told him, okay, now look up why I sent you there. And then he found out about Cool DJ Herc and the very
uh-huh.
first hip hop party thrown on August 9th, 1973.
Uh-huh.
And so from there, just making sure that he understood what he was listening to, you know, down to even when it was really funny, he and his cousin, when they were first making their music in my basement, they were like, oh, well, you know, it was like, oh, well, you're old. You don't understand. I said, uh-huh. Okay. Let's go to YouTube. And I started taking them through the records I was listening to back in like 82, 83.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, now check out Pumpkin and the All-Stars, King of the Beats. Let's check that record out. Okay, you hear that? Good. Okay, now let's listen to Planet Rock. Ah, now you're hearing Planet Rock? Okay.
Right.
Let's take Planet Rock and slow it down. And all of a sudden,
it sounds familiar.
Teach me how to Dougie. Teach me how to Dougie.
Right, 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 right. They were looking at you like, what?
And I'm like, oh yeah, and here's some dudes I went to junior high school with. The Fresh 3 MCs doing F-R-E-S-H, Fresh. I'm like, oh, notice how that drum machine sounds kind of like what y'all are doing now. Oh, yeah. By the way, here's a group that we used to go crazy to in the club called Freeze, doing Pop Goes My Love. Check that out. Hear that beat? Notice how that sounds? Doesn't that sound almost like something that old came out last week? You know, that kind of conversation. But,
well, I think a lot of young people don't understand the depth and prevalence of sampling from the music in the 70s.
Oh yeah, and beyond.
Right, and I would argue that the golden age of contemporary jazz was the 70s. I think some of the most credible records and artists
mm-hmm.
really
mm-hmm.
came to prominence in the 70s.
Would say, yeah, a lot in the 70s.
Yeah.
An awful lot in the 70s. But when you go back to the 60s
mm-hmm.
and you read some of what they were doing with hard bop in
mm-hmm.
particular, that's where you can hear how funk, for example, really starts to move.
Right.
Cold Sweat by James Brown is considered the original funk record.
Okay, okay.
Because it's one of the first records where the bass line does not change through the entire song. Is the
mm-hmm.
ba- bass line, whether you're in the bridge or the chorus, bass player's playing. It's the same. So they consider that the first funk record. But when you consider the fact that, and you know, we want to talk about sampling, they're actually, the horn section's actually playing So What by Miles Davis.
You know, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, yeah, because they're playing So What, but they move where it happens in the where it happens in the measure.
Right.
You have and then they take that boom, boom,
they took the timing of it. Okay.
Boom, about your past. You know, that's what they're doing with it.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, that's early. That's actually sampling, if you think about it.
It really is. I was like, wow. You know, one thing I have been finding is like when I'm listening to music, a lot of songs these days, new ones, they remind me so much of previous songs. It's like they're almost copying and pasting.
Well, it's always kind of been that way. I have a bad habit, and it's especially being a musician, where I'm listening to a record and I'll start singing the other record that's written over the same changes.
Right, right.
And it's interesting because you have people like, what's his name? John Mayer.
Yeah, John Mayer. Mm-hmm.
Comes out with this record called Waiting on the World to Change. And I'm like, dude, you stole that from Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah.
Because I'm listening, he's waiting on the world to change. And I'm like, we're a winner. And never let anybody say that you can't make it. Those are feeble minds in your way. But no more tears do we cry. And you finally got our eyes. And we're moving on them. It's the exact same. Waiting on the world to change. Same change.
Right. It's the same.
Everything.
Right.
Take those same things, but take those same changes and pull the horn arrangement out. And you have Let's Get It On by Marvin Gaye. We're a winner, never let anybody say that you can't make it. Now take that. I've been feeling kind of like it, baby. Trying to find back this feeling for so long. And if you feel like I feel, baby, come on, come on. Waiting on the world to change.
Wow.
Moving on up, same
right,
thing.
Right.
You know, you think about... But that is, in and of itself, that is part of the African-American tradition, because the difference is really the lyrics. Now, I mean, you think about how many thousands and thousands of songs are written over the three chords that are used in the blues.
Right.
And they're all different songs because the words are telling a different story, but it's not the music. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our tradition is that, you know, the tradition becomes the structure of the song.
Right. That's true.
It's this. The other difficulty, and this is what I've been trying to get us past as a people culturally, is we unfortunately have a legacy of being commodities as Black people in this country, as people of color in general in this country. We have a tradition of being commodities because that's the European addiction is cultural exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, to an extent always has been. But when you consider in particular, the United States is based on being a commercial, a mercantile-based business venture, which is why it's a capitalist-based country.
Mm-hmm.
When you consider the fact that our existence has always been a commodity, that even after slavery, everything we produced was considered a commodity and a disposable commodity. You know, records were meant to be disposable entertainment. The fact that it went beyond being disposable was not something that they originally perceived of.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the notion was that we would make a record, the record would be enjoyable for a while, and then you move on to the next record. And unfortunately, when you have something that's a commodity, it loses actual, I would say, to an extent, cultural value in people's minds. So what happens is we don't stop and really think about the fact that our storytelling traditions that came over from the various countries of West Africa affected the way that we told stories and sang songs when we ended up in Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama. It affected how we sang our songs and told our stories and played our drums when we ended up in Jamaica and Antigua and Barbados and Puerto Rico and Cuba. And, you know, and we don't stop and think about then when these cultures start to come back together again during immigration, et cetera, that when these cultures are meeting and we're now forming these new melanges of music, when we're all coming together in the Bronx and we're coming together in Philly and we're coming together in Chicago and we're bringing our musics with us and they're all merging. And now this is becoming soul music. So soul music is taken a little bit from the South and a little bit from the Caribbean and a little bit from West Africa and a little bit from the Native American roots, and it's all combining, and that's what really makes it soul music. But we don't stop and think about that. We don't think about the fact that our literary traditions, you know, that are, you know, our Toni Morrisons are the literary versions of the griots of West Africa. We, you know, we don't naturally make that connection. We don't recognize that if there was not a Harlem Renaissance, and if it was not for the artists that the Harlem Renaissance produced, we would not have had the mentors that led to the Black Arts Movement of the 1960s. We just act like these are two just completely separate things that happened. And we don't then look at the fact that, and the people from the Black Arts Movement became the teachers of the Urban Expressionist Movement that happened in the 90s.
Well, you know what? I don't want to cut you off, but I just wanted to mention to the listeners that June is Black Music Month, and I believe by the time this episode airs, it's going to be, let me look at my calendar real quick. I think it may be like the first or the, it's going to be the 2nd of July. But in honor of Black Music Month, I'm enjoying this discussion. So can you start, because you talk, you started with the Harlem Renaissance, which became the mentors to, you said, the Black Arts Movement. Okay, and continue.
And then the Black Arts Movement, the Black Arts Movement become the mentors basically of what is referred to as the Urban Expressionist Movement, which was the arts movement that sort of happened in, from the mid-90s to about the mid-2000s. Where you had a strong resurgence, you had a resurgence of theater and of jazz, and of you know, this is when even the commercial side becomes neo soul, and it's, you know, basically, okay, let's take 70 soul, exactly what you were talking about, as an influential period. Let's take 70 soul and turn up the bass and the drums, and we'll call it neo soul. But this is what happens during that period. And of course, you think about it, those of us who were of college and early adult age in the, from about the mid-80s to the mid-90s, you know, this is the era of Public Enemy. This is the era of KRS-One and Boogie Down Production. Hip-hop, and of course, it's socially conscious hip-hop, because when you look at the members, for example, of Public Enemy, they were all influenced by the Black Panther Party, down to even being part of their breakfast and after school programs. You know, some of the key members were involved in that in their childhood. These are the influences. The, you know, you consider
some
the fact
of, some
that
soul singers, like,
after the assassination of,
I was saying that Chaka Khan was also involved
in the
program as well. But you were saying,
as a teenager, she was part of the party.
Is a really important point for people to understand from a historical standpoint about, you know, how the musicians and civil rights activists collaborated throughout the years and inspired each other.
Precisely. Well, it was all part of the same element, you know, realizing that Sam Cooke and Malcolm X were friends. That's a point that a lot of people don't consider. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X also drew inspiration from the music of Ray Charles. You know, these are all things that tie together. Soul music becomes the basis of the initial Black Power movement. You know, the feed back and forth. The record that was predicted to be the worst selling record in Motown history becomes their most classic, What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. The first time Motown releases a socially conscious record that's addressing the concerns of the Black community and not trying to appease white fragility. This becomes part of what I was saying was in 1968, after the assassination of Martin Luther King, there came what I call the appeasement era, and we're kind of in that again now, 52 years later. In 1968, after the assassination of Martin Luther King, and they were rioting in the streets. Sounds familiar, yes?
Right.
The rioting in the street factor, and it's like, oh my, and now all of a sudden the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and IBM, and every corporation that has some kind of foundation is throwing money into the Black community left and right, and Madison Avenue picks up on it, and dashikis and afros and Black is Beautiful becomes part of Madison Avenue marketing. And now all of a sudden we're growing, all of a sudden Saturday morning cartoons include Black people, the Jackson 5, integrated cartoon casts of little black and white children now becomes, part of the aesthetic. And the thing is, seeing that I was born in 1968, I'm growing up with this as, okay, this is the way the world is. And then all of a sudden, 1980, a pro-apartheid racist is elected president, and we're right back where we were in the 1950s. Bam, like that.
Wow.
We come from the golden era to, wow, this, we're back in the old America.
Right.
A lot of people did not, and still to this day, do not realize that Ronald Reagan verbally and adamantly supported apartheid in South Africa. It's like there was at least tacit denouncement.
Wait a second. Stop. I'm going to have to unpack that. We're going to have to talk about that a little bit. So there are a segment of society. There are Black Republicans who swear up and down that Ronald Reagan was all of that in the bag of chips. So he was a proponent of apartheid. He supported that regime.
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Openly and vocally.
I think it's so important. This is why I love my podcast, and I love interviewing my guests, because I learn something new every day. And I think it's so important for us to have a correct perspective.
I should also point out that you also have a number of Black Republicans who felt that affirmative action was unnecessary. And what I also find very funny is that many of them got into the positions that they got into because of affirmative action. So you get into the position that you get into because of affirmative action and then turn around and denounce it.
Which is retarded.
We have to stop and look at what are the motives of, that post-traumatic slave disorder is going to lead to all kinds of reactions, unfortunately.
Right.
And, it's Black people who become conservative Republicans and become basically, we have what I'll call it what it is. what you have are black people who become white supremacists. There are such a thing as black white supremacists. We make fun of it on the cartoon The Boondocks, Uncle Ruckus. Yeah, you have your black white supremacists. You used to have, you would have people on the plantation, you know, they reference as Uncle Tom, but you had black people who decided that, yeah, I'm going to worship, I'm going to be loyal to Massa, and that's who I'm loyal to, and that's what it's all about. You know, the character that Samuel L. Jackson played in Django, this is a mentality. This is an element of, this is part of the post-traumatic slave disorder. This is part of the post-traumatic stress disorder. When you have people who are sexually assaulted as children and then become part of the sex industry, this,
right.
This unfortunately is very much like somebody who has been subjected to white supremacy. The response is not always going to be rebellion. It's going to be complete and total acceptance of this position. And this, it's the unfortunate thing. It's the unfortunate thing that we see on both sides. Not everybody who's experienced the effects of a white supremacist society is going to come out, healthy, or at least with a healthy response. Just the same way, not everybody is going to come out with a healthy response to trauma. Any kind of trauma.
Right. Trauma is traumatizing. By the
and it is. And and the thing that we have to look at is, people then try to divide it between Democrat and Republican, and I'm like, okay, those are two different sides of white supremacy. And people try to divide it between liberal and conservative. Well, understand that to be a liberal or conservative means that you're in a place of power. And who has that inherent place of power in this society? So when black people say, well, I'm a conservative, I'm a liberal, no, you're neither. You're siding with. it's a complete lack of awareness about how remarkably. And the thing is, when we go all the way back to the 1700s in particular, this is where you begin to develop a black community, a free black community that stretches throughout the colonies, where you have people recognizing we're not going to be part of the actual structure of whatever this new country is. So if we're going to survive as a people, we're going to need our own social, political, and economic infrastructure. So you have people like Richard Allen in Philadelphia and Absalom Jones in Philadelphia, and people like Paul Cuffey in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and Prince Hall in Boston, Massachusetts, who are all making these recognitions and are therefore now starting to organize along these lines of social, political, and economic infrastructure. So you then begin to see the rise of the free African society. You see the rise of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and you then see also the birth of the African Freemasonic Order. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing that people don't realize what made the African Freemasonic Order essentially was, some people look at it as, you had slave owners who were part of the Masons. Yes, you did. You also, but now what this did was it gave black people a worldwide connection. And what we have to remember is that the United States is unique. Freemasonry in the United States was unique because the United States was the first place that had racially segregated Freemasonry. You had Masonry of every race in every other country that had temples or had lodges. This was the only one that was racially segregated. So now what you had were black people who had an international connection that had nothing to do with the United States. And this is what made, of course, the infrastructure worry was the fact that you now had a black infrastructure. So when you have a black infrastructure that begins to develop, this is where you start to make concessions. And this is how the game has been played ever since those days. Every time there's a black advancement, you make a concession, and the point of that concession is to destroy the advancement.
I knew I wasn't imagining things.
I'm not sure.
I mean, what you said, I was
it's
just...
really just, it's just a matter of looking. Oh, no, I was like, oh, no, you're not imagining it. This is very much what's going on.
Yeah, my thing is, you know, looking at what's going on now, I know that sabotage for the progress that's happening now is going to follow. And it would behoove us as in all sectors of society to think about how the setback can come and be ready for its presentation so we can fight up against that. But I wanted to ask you, when you
what I was going to say is the recurrence that keeps happening is that we always fall for benevolence, but it's mm-hmm. never actually empowering benevolence that we're falling for, if you will.
Right.
We fall, you know, it's sort of like, you know, if we go back to if you go back to the Jesus parable of, you know, teach a man to fish and he eats for a lifetime, give him a fish and he eats for a day. Well,
yeah.
What happens is it always ends up being a giving a fish, but it's never the teaching of. You see what I'm saying? It's even down to when you look at the end of slavery in the Caribbean, the end of slavery in the Caribbean led to a period known as the apprenticeship period. And the apprenticeship period was basically, okay, everybody who was a slave is now being trained how to either run a business or run the country. So we can just go and leave you to your devices. When you look at give, but very little of the give was actually empowering. With the exception of the historically black colleges, and even in the structure of the historically black colleges, they were trying to limit what could be done.
So do you think that this time around will be different? Because you have black women are the largest new business starters in the country, are obtaining, you know, college degrees at a rapid pace.
Yeah. It's going to be different. You see, the interesting thing that has historically been the case in the 20th and going into the 21st century is that because of sort of like the double check and balance system, if you will, of racism and sexism, throughout the 20th century, women have been able to get into many places men could not, because they were less threatening. I mean, even if you consider the fact that when they started looking at office work, office secretarial work, et cetera, it was if you let black women in, black men would not get into that office, would not get into that opportunity. It's one of the interesting things that they found when they were doing research in terms of small business administration, loans, et cetera, was in terms of how many applications for loans, assistance in terms of startups and businesses, or even approaches to startups and businesses were being submitted, and also just in terms of the recognition of business. The other aspect of the shift is that this is where the sexism comes in. When they start to now do the advancements, especially as we go into from about, I'd say, the mid-90s to the present, the shift becomes where now black men start to advance in the corporate positions. What ends up happening is this is now creating a need for entrepreneurship. And the women will, you know, women have always, if you even think about commerce going back to West Africa, women have always been the lead when it comes to entrepreneurship and business within the black community. Who actually ran the store was the wife, was the missus. Who actually kept the business together 9 times out of 10 were the women. It was, you know, this understanding of the commercial and the commerce side. So seeing that happen at this point is sort of like a continuum of what's always been. the interesting thing is that trying to do this within a very sexist, patriarchal society, this is sort of like almost a complete, not almost, this is a subversion of that. But the interesting change over is that this has always, again, been the way, because it is a racist, sexist system, this has been a way to even keep women, female-owned businesses down. What we're now seeing is that they can't even keep that suppression going because there are so many.
Right. It's the floodgates have really opened, and I think with
and it's beautiful
technology, I think technology has empowered a lot of people to be able to collaborate without physically being in the same area. So, it's been a game changer. So we're getting to the end of our time together, and I've really been enjoying this. So how can people connect with you?
Okay, well, on social media, you can find me on Instagram at Mwalim. That's Mwalim. You can find me on Facebook at The Funky Professor, DaphuN. Actually, I'm going to make it easy for everybody. Find me on Facebook at Bronx Boheme, BronxBoheme, at Bronx Boheme. And you can find me at Mwalim or at Bronx Boheme also on Instagram. My website is thefunkyprofessor.com. And if you go to my website, thefunkyprofessor.com/Bronx Boheme, you can get a copy of my novel, Land of the Black Squirrels. And let's see. Speaking of entrepreneurial ventures, I'm opening a recording studio and content creation facility up here called Polyphonic Studios, and we offer remote mixing and mastering services for musicians. Again, we talk about technology allowing for collaboration. You can record it at home, send it to us, and end up with a professional product. And check us out at polyphonicstudios.com. And also proud to say the record by the ZYG 808 Thumpin' and the music video for Thumpin', which are premiering on July 1st. And Lady Z is actually one of the artists featured in our video. That's premiering July 1st. You can find that on Vevo, and you can find the single on all platforms. And that's actually the very first product coming out of Polyphonic Studios.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So yeah, that's great to hear. So, you know, I wish we had more time. There's so much we could talk about, from music to history to politics. I mean, you truly are the funky professor. And I want to thank you again for coming on to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z.
Thank you so much for having me on. All right, let's chat again sometime.
This is a story about when you stand at the edge of the abyss and there's nothing there staring you back. That is where a man finds his character.
even coronavirus can't keep us apart. Because we love you so much. From all of us at Bashani Radio app, stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay home.
Stay home.
And keep us blasting on your phones. Bashani Radio app. Always talking about everything. Download us free in the App Store. Kaboom! You heard?